The Door County Pulse podcast is brought to you in part by the Door County Community Foundation, inspiring people to give back, to sustain, and advance the community that we love. To learn more, visit givedoorcounty.org. Hey, Melissa, welcome to the wonderful pod closet of the Peninsula Pulse.
Thank you. I tried to get out before and I couldn't. So I feel like you're keeping people in here. But anyway, it's great. It's great to be here.
You would not be the first person who just died of suffocation inside this studio. Now, what Melissa was actually just recording something for us, and we have a very intense door on our podcast studio that must weigh about 1,000 pounds. That is a Dave Elliott / Brian Larson concoction. That it's thick and heavy, and the magnet is actually really good, so you kind of have to slam your shoulder into it. So Melissa thought she was stuck in here permanently. So
it's fine.
We got her out.
I just would need to be fed Triscuits. It's fine.
We'll slide them through the fence.
Totally.
Triscuits of all food. I just need Triscuits.
Yeah, that's what I ate for breakfast, so it was like the first thing I thought of. Very healthy over here.
Yes, very well rounded. So let's talk about the new car that your husband wants to buy.
Please don't ask me to do that. Don't ask me to do that.
So the real reason that we got Melissa stuck in the closet here is the Women's Fund Tales of Our Lives Story Slam is coming up. And when I saw that press release come through, I thought, you know, those are incredible stories. I've been to this thing. We should just use one of those on a podcast sometime. And Melissa, who has shared her story at the Story Slam a couple of times, volunteered to do so. So she came in here and recorded one of her stories that she has told in the past or will tell this year. Which one is it?
I told it last year.
Okay.
So.
And so that will come up a little later in this podcast. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the experience of the Women's Fund Story Slam. Maybe start by just kind of explaining to somebody who's never been there or seen it, what is this event like?
Absolutely. So the Tales of Our Lives event is modeled after, you know, kind of in the early 2000s, 2010s, there were a lot of story slam competitions that were happening kind of around the U.S. So one of the best known ones is one called The Moth. It started in New York City, but there are moth story slams all across the United States. And one of them, I think the closest one to us, is probably Madison. So they still do a monthly story slam. And basically what it is it's people from the community getting up and telling a personal story. Unlike The Moth, Tales of Our Lives doesn't have a specific theme. Everyone knows that they're going to be telling a story. With The Moth, what you do is you will get there early to the event, you'll put your name in, and you may or may not speak that month. You know, 10 people might speak and you might not be one of those. Tales of Our Lives, everyone knows that they're speaking. And it's an incredible experience. The first time that I spoke at Tales of Our Lives, it was 2016. They had been doing it for a couple years. And one of the coolest things that, and I just love that this event attracts the people that are truly curious about the people in their community. Mm. And so often in Door County, you know, we live in a small place. We think we know everybody. We think we know the big stories, but we really don't, or we don't know them the way that somebody experienced them. And so I love that the people who come to this event understand that. They want to know more. They want to feel connection. You know, stories connect us. It's how we build friendships and, you know, make life worth living. So hopefully some of my stories I don't want anyone to know. But anyway.
Setting the bar really low.
Yeah,
we
totally.
Make life worth
it
living.
It makes life worth living. But it's just very cool to be up on that stage and know that everyone there, from the Women's Fund to this year, Northern Sky Theater, which I still want to call AFT, I'm sorry.
Yes, me too.
Northern Sky Theater is co-partnering with us for the event. And so, like, they're helping us by really coaching us, like, on our delivery and kind of all of that stuff of our stories.
What is the preparation process for going up there?
So,
because not everybody is a natural storyteller.
No.
Even people who can tell a story sitting around on couches or over beers or over coffee, it's different to be on stage by yourself, not conversing with other people where they're kind of filling in some gaps. You have to tell
Absolutely.
The complete story.
Yes. So what the process is typically like is, you know, it isn't like we just get up there and we say any old thing that comes to mind, right? So the process for this begins, I think it begins as early as November. You know, that's when people are selected. I know, you know, the Women's Fund goes through kind of a process to select people or to, you know, ask people if they'd be interested in telling their stories. And then for 3 months, we're really just writing our drafts, you know, and we're encouraged to keep it between 10 and 15 minutes. You know, there's obviously just some like parameters around things. But we aren't really told to stay away from any topics, right? So there's been stories of people coming out to their families. There's been stories of medical issues and heartbreak and, you know, kind of all of these things. And, you know, it takes a couple months for those things to get put on paper. Then we go through an editing process. The Women's Fund, you know, the Women's Fund Tales of Our Lives Committee helps us kind of tighten those stories, you know, gives us advice about like, oh, we can move this paragraph around. And then like I was alluding to, where Northern Sky comes in is they've actually paired us with a coach. So each slammer has their own coach. So my coach is Mary McDonald Kerr, and I'll be working with her next week, and she'll be talking to me about things like delivery, intonation, pausing, you know, kind of all of that stuff, yeah. Which is really great because then it helps people feel more confident on stage. The stories don't need to be memorized, but it is helpful if you can look away from your paper, you know, and actually connect with the audience.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of what the preparation process is like. It's kind of, it's not super intense, but it's between the Women's Fund and Northern Sky, they're giving us enough support that we don't feel like we're literally just up there by ourselves, even though we are.
and that's good to know. So for people who are thinking, oh, what is this Tales of Our Lives? Is this something I would want to go to? It's not just like incredible, honest stories being told, but there's a bit of a performance thing. Like, it is good to go see because people tell these stories in a captivating way.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I've been to a couple of them and I cried, I laughed, I was moved for sure.
Totally.
You know, yeah, sometimes you feel there's a little bit of an awkwardness because these are people, in my case, it's often people I know who are getting up there. Sometimes it's people I haven't met ever,
yep.
But sometimes it's our coworker, Jess Farley, has done it before. And she told an incredible story about a friend of hers that she had lost. And you get to know your friends on a different level when they tell these stories. But it also is a good reminder just in general of like the value of empathy, because you realize anybody that's in that room, even if they're not speaking, probably has a story like that.
Yep.
And some of these are very lighthearted and funny, and yep. Some of them are really poignant and very, you know, had to be incredibly difficult for people to share.
Absolutely. I don't want to talk for Jeannie Hoffman, but last year, one of the slammers, her name is Jeannie Hoffman, and she wrote an entire story about moving up to Door County and really struggling with, you know, the fact that when she visited Door County, it was very, you know, like she felt welcomed, and then she moved up here and it felt like it was definitely a transplant versus local situation.
No,
never happens. So many people came up to Jeannie at the end of that, you know, at the end of the show last year and were like, I'm so sorry that you went through that. And a lot of people, we were talking just after the show, the slammers, and we were like, we've probably inadvertently made someone feel that way. And it's absolutely a good reminder that, you know, empathy is incredibly important. And just because we take somebody at face value, there's so much more, you know, beyond the surface. And I think that's one of the cool things about this event is that even if you think you know the situation, to be able to see it through somebody's eyes and to hear it through their voice is a completely different thing.
Yeah, and it takes so much guts to do what you do and the other slammers who stand up there in front of, it'd almost be easier, I think. Well, I don't know. Yeah, this is a question for you. What's easier? Let's say you did this in a bar in Chicago and you knew maybe Zach, your husband, is in the audience and you don't know anybody else in there? Or is it this environment where you do know people and there's maybe a comfort zone? Like, what do you think is more intimidating?
I actually think that the Chicago thing would be more intimidating for me.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is all three of my stories, the two stories that I've done in the past and the story that I'll do in next month, it is still March, right? Next month, I'm reading from my teenage and college journals. So right around the time that I did the first story slam, I watched a documentary, and I can't remember what the documentary is called, but it's basically all these people sharing stories from their journals from when they were a kid. And I'm like, I know I've got some juicy stuff there. So, you know, I think the Women's Fund brings me in for comic relief, because 13-year-old Mel and 19-year-old Mel and 22-year-old Mel are just very funny. But my point is, like, because people know me and because they know who I am, I feel like the jokes land, like they're funnier, you know, like the journal entries are funny because, you know, people know me as like an anxious wreck that, you know, was boy crazy when I was a kid. So, you know, like all of this makes sense, and it just kind of adds to the allure of Mel, I guess. But
you don't have to lay all this groundwork.
No.
To like, say like, here's the context of who I am.
Yeah. You guys already know I'm screwed up. So here's some more evidence.
I can't imagine. Like, I'm a writer now. So
what?
Obviously.
You?
Yeah. I also grew up keeping journals, and I have never opened one up since.
Oh, you
and
should.
I don't know if I could possibly do it. I have them all. And part of me, I spend some moments going, oh, that'll be good to revisit one day. That'll be good for my little guys, Connor and Grady, to see one day, like when I'm gone, and they're like, what was Dad like? Because like when I lost my mom, there were some writings that I found that I was like, this is,
absolutely,
oh my gosh, that brings her back to me. But then part of me goes, nope, these should all burn. These should all burn in the next campfire for sure. What is in those things? Like, how stupid was I? I can't even read articles I wrote 10 years ago because I'm like,
well,
this is trash.
There's that, but, yes, for me too. Yeah.
But what you said about the comfort zone, too, is a lot of the things I write and that fortunately people are willing to read or like listen to here.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder, I'm like, well, it only makes sense within the context of Door County. Is this funny or moving, or does it matter at all beyond like the bridge, or as some aside here?
Oh, no.
A couple of interviews recently, I was talking to folks from Sturgeon Bay. Who live on the west side. And it's funny because you know this. You grew up in Sevastopol. So the joke would always be like, oh, yeah, they never made it over the bridge. But if I realized this, I'd heard this phrase before, but I'd never really thought about it in this way. But like, if you grew up on the west side of Sturgeon Bay, the bridge isn't the reference. It's the Brussels Hill.
It is the Brussels Hill.
So people had said, yeah,
rest in peace, Brussels Hill. I mean, it's still there, but.
Yeah, but now you can bypass it.
Totally. I thought Miles was going to make another Sturgeon Bay joke.
And no,
I was going to have to tell your listeners that I am not a nice person.
Anyway. I'm going to spare you that. Well, anyway, when is the Story Slam this year?
Yep. So the Story Slam is Saturday, April 20th. We typically in the past, the Women's Fund has had two nights with, sometimes we've done the same slammers, sometimes we've done individual slammers, but this year it is one night only. So Saturday, April 20th, I believe it starts at 7 p.m. It's at Northern Sky Theater. It's in their indoor Gould Theater. So nobody's freezing, you know, outdoors in Peninsula State Park, and tickets are, I think, maybe 70% gone at this point. It might even be more. This is a very popular event, and so if you are thinking about going, please get those tickets sooner rather than later.
And the good news is the Greenwood will be open that night, and the bar will be open. No.
My God. I looked at Miles just now like, what?
Guy can dream.
Yeah. Me too.
My favorite non-open bar maybe in the world.
Yeah. My favorite non-open coffee shop. I know which one I'd pick. So.
Well, I hope people check it out. It's a great event. It's just a really cool moving evening. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time working on our philanthropy issue that comes out right around the same time as that event. And when that comes out, there will be a feature in there about some of the early pioneers at the Women's Fund, what they've created and some of the events that have spawned from that, whether it's the Women's Fund's luncheon in the summer or the Story Slam, the way that it gives voice to women in our community and men to talk about women in our community and provide a place for women to be empowered. I think it really has made a tremendous difference in our community over the last 15 years, and the Story Slam is a great example of that. So, yep. Melissa, thank you for being willing to share your story.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a short break, and then Melissa will be back with one of her stories from the Story Slam. Hey, listeners. Do you love the Door County Pulse podcast?
and want to support the work that we do? Well, head on over to DoorCountyPulse.com and click on the shop button in the top menu. There, you can purchase Door County Parks posters, Door County Lighthouse posters, postcards, photo books, and more. You can also subscribe to the Peninsula Pulse. Yep, that sounds crazy because you probably already get the Pulse for free because we mail it to every mailbox in Door County and put it on newsstands throughout the peninsula. But when you buy a subscription for just $52 a year, you'll help support the work of the journalist whose reporting informs so much of this podcast and everything that we do. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Door County Pulse podcast.
1111 Mound Street by Melissa Ripp. This weekend, literally while waking up, I managed to dislocate my kneecap. I'm leading with this freaky and painful story for a few reasons. One, it explains my limp onto the stage. Two, it reaffirms what I've suspected for some time now, that weird injuries just start to happen to you in your 40s. And three, it takes me back to the only other time I've injured this knee, at a house party my sophomore year of college at UW-Madison. I remember that party well. I even remember the address, 1111 Mound Street. Today, the Greenbush neighborhood in Madison consists of rows and rows of colonial-style houses on tree-lined streets. But in 2001, Greenbush and Mound Street was just like any neighborhood close to campus, chock full of college students away from their small towns, at least in my case, and ready to party. 1111 Mound was 1.5 miles away from Schlichter Residence Hall, my dorm room at UW. It was far away, even by walking to a house party standards, even though my friends and I had warmed ourselves by pre-partying, which for us meant shots of the most vile cheap vodka you can think of, and chasing it with warm Fresca. Yes, you heard that correctly, warm Fresca. Hey, refrigerating it was too much work. If a mile and a half was far away on the way there, it was an eternity on the way back. Because after drinking mass quantities of Wapatuli in a dark, dank basement with an uneven floor, me and my way too high going out boots fell and twisted my ankle, tripping over an exposed crack in the concrete. Down I went, and shortly after, I started hobbling home. Without the guy I was making out with, I might add. Apparently, dudes just aren't into girls who injure themselves. I never got the injury checked out. I just stayed off of it until it felt okay to walk on it again. I mean, who has time to go to the doctor when you have a full slate of classes and you're trying to find a boyfriend besides? But from that day on, I'd be lying if I said that I had never experienced pain in this right knee before. After I came back from my emergency room experience last weekend, I started to think, was this knee injury somehow related to that fateful night in a Mound Street basement? And if that was true, how many other threads could be pulled along between the 19-year-old I was and the 41-year-old I am now? The last time I was on the Tales of Our Lives stage was 8 years ago. In that story, I had shared embarrassing entries from my eighth grade journal, trying to find the threads that connected teenage Mel to the woman I was in my early 30s. At that point in my life, I was going through a thing. It felt like adulthood hadn't really been what I expected. I expected to be further along than I was. I expected not to have a pile of student loan debt. I expected not to be the nervous wreck I had been for most of my adult life, afraid to take risks. I suspected that I would have learned a useful skill, like baking bread. I expected a lot, it seemed. I hadn't read that journal, or any of the others, since then. And in those 8 years, plenty has happened. 3 years of a global pandemic, for one, where 33-year-old Mel would be happy to know that I did learn how to bake bread, just not all that well. I moved back home to Door County, a place that I've missed every single day that I wasn't here. I took a risk. I jumped into being a small business owner, and it turned out to be the best employment decision I've ever made. And lo and behold, 8 years ago, I married a dude. 8 years later, still married to that dude. Go Mel. But today, at 41, I feel very aware of my age, even before the freak kneecap injury. I'm not sure how to explain it. It's not that I wish I could go back in time to when I was younger. There are so many lessons I've learned from those years that have got me to where I am today. But I am starting to feel just the teensiest bit invisible. invisible and too comfortable, if I'm being honest. Maybe I'm still going through a thing. The invisibility I feel, well, it's a little unnerving. I think it's because in so many other ways, I've hit my stride. I have a husband that I love and who loves me most of the time. Close friends that accept me for who I am. A business that's successful and allows me to do things like travel and purchase art. Two things that are as necessary to me as breathing. I finally took the leap and got on anti-anxiety medication after having crippling anxiety for the better part of 2 decades. I have a credit card that accrues travel points for those trips and 2 drawers full of fancy, smelly candles. I've shed toxic relationships and largely don't give a damn about what people think about me. So what exactly am I missing? Well, I think it's energy, impulsiveness, intrigue, excitement. Coincidentally, all things that 19-year-old me seemed to have no shortage of. In contrast, these are literally the 4 things that bring me the most joy right now. Number 1, shouting to my husband, who most likely could not care less that there's a new bird at one of my 20 new bird feeders outside. 2, going grocery shopping. 3, using my new vacuum. Hey, it's a Dyson. 4, purchasing yet another houseplant. Sophomore year, Mel would have been ashamed of these developments. So maybe there is a point in taking a look at what I was thinking about at that age. I always look back on my college years and I think about how mature and focused I was for my age. So maybe there are some clues in these beautifully handwritten pages that will make my life right now all make sense. So let's consult 19-year-old Mel and her journal. Maybe she's an oracle for our modern times. February 6, 2001. Aaron and I have figured out our Valentine's Day plans. We're getting drunk and going to see the movie Hannibal. We figured that's the least romantic movie we could possibly see. Valentine's Day is strange. I love being single and I keep reminding myself that this is just another day. I don't want a boyfriend anyway, unless he's Daniel Keats from Creative Writing, that guy Cole who was in that band that we saw last weekend, Charlie from my experimental film class, Eric's friend Brett, or that guy Tony I met at that house party last weekend. Related, are East Coasters allowed to date outside their species? I think it's safe to say that we're off to a really bad start in the wisdom department. February 9th, 2001. Aaron and I decided to create an email account and email Daniel Keats from Creative Writing. Aaron wrote the email, and she asked Daniel if he was single. And if he was, there was someone in his creative writing class that really liked him. 15 hours ago and a few drinks ago, I thought it was a great idea. Now, an hour before I'm supposed to head to creative writing class, I'm feeling differently. If only he wasn't a senior and an East Coaster, it would be so much easier to gauge if he liked me too. Even his middle name is cute, Seth. Seth. What if he has a girlfriend and he doesn't answer the email? What if he has a girlfriend and she answers the email? I'd be so embarrassed I'd have to hide in my room the rest of the semester. I'll need to have my assignments emailed. I mean, let's just unpack this for a second. My best friend and I thought it would be a great idea to create a random email address just to email a guy I like to ask if he was single. February 11th, 2001. Totally bizarre night. Eric's friend Brett came out with us and we wound up kissing. At the end of the night, he was like, "I guess I should get your number or something." Totally uninspired and uninterested. Like he was thinking he should get an oil change or go grocery shopping. I read the room and was like, "Hey, dude, don't feel like you have to call me." "Okay," he says. "Okay? Who says okay? How did I think it was a good idea to make out with this kid?" February 14th, 2001. So many beautiful boys on State Street tonight. So many beautiful boys that will never be mine. Sigh. February 18th, 2001. I've changed my mind about this whole relationship thing. It's not that I don't want one or I'm too busy for one. I just want to skip dating altogether. This feels like a chore, and I'm just too damn impatient. Just give me a boyfriend out of a vending machine or something. Well, at least Tony said he'd call tonight. February 21st, 2001. Tony keeps calling me. Make it stop. February 22nd, 2001. I've just decided that I'm not in any real hurry to get into a relationship. Having a boyfriend requires time and effort, and I just don't have any of those things right now. So I'm gonna apologize to the men knocking at my door, but I'm gonna need you to step back. Mel is focusing on herself. February 26, 2001. All I can think about is Daniel Seth Keats from Creative Writing and how he needs to be mine. Now. February 28, 2001. We critiqued Daniel Keats' story in Creative Writing today, and let's just say, no longer attractive to me. His story was so bad. All plot, no character development. Aren't there any cute guys at UW that can actually string a sentence together? The worst part is when he asked me what I thought after class, and I was like, oh yeah, so great, great exposition, and literally sprinted out of the room. March 4th, 2001. Mel made out with the hottest guy in the whole world last night. He even had a shirt and belt from Banana Republic. That means he's got great taste. March 23, 2001. Heading home to Door County for the weekend today via the Greyhound bus. I bought the New York Times for the trip. How bohemian of me. Sorry, I just had to throw that last one in there. The fact that I equated the Times with me being a female version of Jack Kerouac was just too good to pass up. So I could go on and on here and read you a bunch of entries, but the truth is, sophomore year me, at least on these pages, is pretty one-dimensional. No oracle of wisdom here. But on the other hand, reading these pages is pretty revealing. You know, the first time I read these pages, I thought I was just boy crazy. The second time I reread these pages, I realized I really just wanted someone to love me at that time. Love me and really truly see me. And that's exactly what I have right now. As I've gotten older, I've taken great care to surround myself with people who really truly see me. So maybe the question I need to ask myself is, invisible? Invisible to whom? Because here are two things I know for sure. The first is visibility isn't something that's confined to our younger selves. No matter how old we are or how many dislocated kneecaps we have the right to recognition, to be seen for who we really are, to be appreciated for who we really are. The second thing is that 41-year-old me would have absolutely no issue telling Daniel Seth Keats that his story was horrible. Constructively, of course, but all the same. And that's the very best thing about getting old. With that in mind, this is what I say to myself. And I say it to you too, in case you need it. I see you the way that you want to be seen. I see you and I rejoice in the fact that you are not 19 anymore. If I could, I'd go back in time and tell that girl that she was silly and smart and loyal and curious and so, so amazing. She was damn good then, but here's the thing. She's even better now. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Door County Pulse podcast. This podcast is produced by Miles Danhausen Jr. and edited by the Grammy Award-nominated Hans Christian. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to check out more of the podcast, visit doorcountypulse.com/podcasts to find our archive of more than 500 episodes featuring local movers and shakers, characters, business owners, authors, musicians, and everyone who helps make this community that we love.